From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
A push to privatize state prisons may not have the backing it needs to pass on the Senate floor.
Every day they keep trying to change opinions, and I don't think anybody else is going to change at this point. The bill would die, and that's the way it was Tuesday, that's the way it was Wednesday, that's the way it is today.
The House takes up redistricting with its chairman explaining the process.
My job has just been to do the best job I can. To try to make this fair, to try to make it open, and try to make it legal. And I think we've achieved all three.
Both the House and Senate clash over spending for health care, and lawmakers push to make sure you're paying your taxes when shopping online. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Does a bill to privatize about 30 South Florida prisons have enough traction in the Florida Senate? As Sasha Cordner reports, several senators weighed in on the future of the legislation.
My understanding is that the votes are not there, and that's why the bill is not up on the floor.
Senate Democratic leader Nan Rich is among the opponents of the prison privatization bill that was expected to be taken up on the Senate floor Wednesday. For a prison privatization bill to pass, it's going to require a majority vote of the 40-member body. But Senate Bill 2038 may not have all the votes it needs.
That's not even an opinion. That's a fact.
Republican Senator Paula Dockery says she knows the bill would have been gutted had it been taken up for a vote. And she says she's also sure one of the amendments filed by Republican Senator Mike Fasano to derail the bill would have passed. That amendment would have delayed prison privatization for a year until a study was done to prove the cost savings.
Every day they keep trying to change opinions, and I don't think anybody else is going to change at this point. The bill would die, the amendment would pass. And that's the way it was Tuesday, that's the way it was Wednesday, that's the way it is today. I think the removing of Senator Fasano might be a message to other Republicans that they could lose their chairmanships, and I think that that's a very unfortunate way to lead a chamber.
Senate President Mike Haradopoulos removed Fasano from two Senate budget committees Wednesday, including one Fasano chairs. Haradopoulos says Fasano lost the chairmanship due to his inability to make tough budget decisions, not his beliefs on prison privatization. Fasano, though, has said he's hopeful Republicans who chair a committee won't lose their chairmanship if they're opponents of prison privatization like him. Republican Senator Greg Evers, who chairs the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, says he's not concerned, even though he, like Fasano, is a no vote. He says to get the necessary yes votes, all the Senate leadership has to do is start from scratch, make the bill go through the proper committees, and prove to everyone that there is, in fact, a set cost savings.
And not starting with 50, coming to 40, to 22, to 20, to $18 million. I mean, lay it out there. If there is a savings, I feel reasonably sure that the bill would move. But until that determination is made, until the full extent of the process is utilized, I don't feel like that we can do anything as far as allowing that bill to move forward.
Governor Rick Scott has been trying to drum up support by meeting with Republican senators to switch their vote. Scott also met with Senator Charlie Dean, but the Inverness lawmaker says he wouldn't budge.
We did have a discussion, and he is very committed to trying to balance the budget of this state. I support him. This particular instance is just one that I disagree. When it comes to the day-to-day operation of jailing people for profit, I don't support that.
Senator Mike Fasano says he will continue to lobby against the bill, and he knows the opposite will be true with Haradopoulos.
I'm sure he's going to do everything he can between now and then, or now and next week, or now before session ends, which is about, 3.5 weeks to go, will do everything he can to get the votes. Once he feels confident that he has the votes, he'll probably bring the bill up.
But Haradopoulos says he's expecting to take the bill up again next week, and he disagrees that by delaying the vote, he will get the votes.
I think the vote is extremely close, and as you know, Senator Bullard is not here, and so we're paying a lot of respect to everyone. And so hopefully she'll be back. I don't anticipate her voting yes. So odds are, it's not by delaying it, I'm not picking up votes.
So far, the clear yes votes include Senate President Mike Haradopoulos, Senate President-designate Don Gates, Senate Budget Chief J.D. Alexander, Senator John Thrasher, Senate Majority Leader Andy Gardner, and Senator Ellen Bogdanoff, who's taking over Fasano's chair seat. Herodopoulos says if the Senate votes down the bill, then they'll have to cut $16 to $30 million elsewhere in the budget, like education or health care. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Redistricting is headed for final action in the Republican-controlled Florida legislature. James Call reports the House began floor debate today with a final vote expected Friday.
Lawmakers need to approve three maps in time for the fall election. Every 10 years, the boundaries for state legislative districts and the congressional seats are redrawn to reflect changes in population. The three maps before the House passed out of committee along party-line votes. Democrats say they are not consistent with the new standards approved by voters in 2010. The so-called Fair Districts Amendments require political districts to be as compact and contiguous as possible. Spring Hill Republican Representative Ron Schenck is a subcommittee chairman. On the floor, he explained why the House proposal complies with fair districts.
The State House map drawn 10 years ago only kept 21 counties whole. This proposed State House map keeps 37 counties whole. By population and geography, it is only possible to keep a maximum of 38 counties whole, and we keep 37. The State House map drawn 10 years ago split 170 of Florida's 411 incorporated municipalities. This proposed State House map only split 75 of those municipalities.
Three groups in the Fair Districts Coalition, which sponsored the anti-gerrymandering amendment, say the proposed maps fail the fairness test. They contend, for example, the proposed Senate map leaves every incumbent in better shape for re-election. Democrats lack the number to influence the outcome of committee meetings or even floor action, but they do have a plan. They can question the bill's sponsor on the House floor.
I need you to check with Ron or I this morning.
Fort Lauderdale Representative Perry Thurston is briefing Democrats about their strategy for the redistricting debate. They want the Republicans to explain themselves.
And on the congressional map, we've got Taylor and Steinberg will be handling the bulk of the questions for there. However,
lawyers for the Democrats crafted a series of questions designed to shed light on legislative intent. Key West Representative Ron Saunders says the minority party wants to help the Republicans explain how the proposed maps comply with the Fair Districts Amendments.
By our questions, we're trying to find whether the maps do meet those requirements. And obviously, the question will be directed towards the eventual court battle. There's no question these maps will be going to court. And so we're trying to, in this opportunity, to find out the legislative intent, for example, by asking questions, and also the effect of the maps.
Democrats also plan during the debate to call a Republican bluff. Saunders says they will propose an amendment that would strengthen Republican majorities in two districts. They expect the amendment to fail and thereby demonstrate that the minority party was shut out of the process of drawing new political boundaries.
The Republicans cannot say, as they did in the Senate, well, the Democrats didn't offer any amendments, so how did we know they couldn't have done a better job with it? Well, we're showing, even on an amendment that helps only Republicans, if the Republicans vote no, why would they vote on one that helps Democrats?
Wesley Chappell Representative Will Weatherford led the House in drawing the new maps. He says this year's redistricting process has been the most open, inclusive, and transparent exercise in history. A Times Herald analysis of the proposed House map found it could increase the minority party strength by up to 11 members. It pits 38 incumbents against each other, in essence drawing a third of the House membership out of their district. Weatherford says that is because he followed the letter of the law and honored the Constitution. He appears unconcerned about any potential lawsuit.
I don't know. I'm not going to try to predict what's going to happen in court or what litigation may or may not come. My job has just been to do the best job I can to try to make this fair, to try to make it open, and try to make it legal. And I think we've achieved all three. So
the House is expected to pass the three maps Friday and send them to the Senate. Once the Senate acts on them, they will be sent to the Florida Supreme Court for a 30-day review. Redistricting maps were challenged in court in 1992 and 2002, and most observers expect a court challenge again this year. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a Senate proposal on health care spending sets up a clash with the House over rate and program cuts.
But it's doubtful that the entire budget reduction will be through program reductions or eliminations, so there may have to be some, but that's my last resort.
A House committee moves to change state workers' health care benefits.
The state serves as the architect custodian of the plan, providing generous benefits and allowing employees to be passive and perhaps even entitled.
And lawmakers say the state's brick-and-mortar stores can't compete with online retailers who don't have to charge a sales tax.
Best Buy has now become a showroom for online. People go into Best Buy, they find what they really like and find out how much it is and try it out.
The House and Senate are poised to clash over funding for the state's health and human services. The House Finance Committee has approved a plan to slash more than $800 million from health care, while the Senate cuts fewer dollars. And as Lynn Hatter reports, neither budget comes close to the $2 billion mark Governor Rick Scott proposed in his state spending plan.
Today I'm here to deliver one message. Health care cuts don't heal. They're permanent.
Medicaid is their only option, and I'm concerned that cuts in Medicaid would alter my ability to care for these vulnerable citizens.
Thanks to Vincent House, that is how I recover through my mental illness.
That was Judy Griffin with Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare, Ashley Allen with Shands Hospital, and Chiquita Ivory of St. Petersburg. They and several other speakers from different healthcare groups are asking lawmakers not to cut their budgets. They argue the cuts that have taken place over the last few years have led to a reduction in services and, in some cases, the ability to treat patients. While sympathetic to their cause, Senate Health and Human Services Committee Chairman Joe Negron says his proposed $390 million cut to health care isn't that bad.
If you look at $390 million out of almost $30 billion budget, that's a 1.3% reduction. And I think most families and businesses in this state, given where we are, believe that the state can absorb a 1.3% reduction. And again, I understand the context that we've been making reductions, but I just want to keep some sense of proportionality.
Negron is the Senate's chief healthcare budget writer, and he's crafting a spending plan that looks a lot different from the one his House counterparts are proposing. Negron's plan would cut low-performing programs that deal with mental health and substance abuse for adults before looking at Medicaid rate reductions to hospitals, which is a key part of the House proposal.
My priority is to reduce programs, and, you know, but it's doubtful that the entire budget reduction will be through program reductions or elimination, so there may have to be some, but that's my last resort, is to reduce hospitals. I'm not planning to make any reductions to nursing home expenditures.
Negron is also trying to keep Medicaid services intact for adults, something that's reduced under House budget plans. The two chambers are in agreement on limiting the number of times Medicaid patients can go to the emergency room for non-emergency visits. Even though Negron's budget reductions are less than the House and don't even come close to the governor's call for $2 billion in health care reductions, it's still too much for advocates who say they don't want any funding drops at all. Outside the Senate's chambers, a group of teachers and nurses rally against what they say is an unfair choice, education versus health care. Money taken from the Health and Human Services budget is going to support education, which is expected to receive an extra $1 billion to help hold funding levels steady for the upcoming fiscal year. Senate Minority Leader Nan Rich says even though Negron's proposal doesn't contain the more drastic cuts, it still amounts to a rob Peter to pay Paul approach.
Then we get into child welfare, we get into substance abuse and mental health. These programs and these services have been cut to the bone, most of them. And that's why we had this press conference. It's a false choice to say that each and every time you have to cut, that that's the only avenue.
Rich says the state can stave off the cuts by closing tax loopholes. She, along with fellow Democrats, Senator Oscar Brainin of Miami and Representative Evan Genie, are proposing legislation like Senate Bill 1590 that would do that.
We're not talking about tax increases. We are talking about making everybody pay their fair share of taxes that are already on the books and that everybody should be paying. So a small mom and pop, you know, store pays a corporate income tax, so should the large multinational corporations. And that's kind of what this is about.
But the likelihood of the bills getting a hearing is slim. Meanwhile, the different positions between the House and Senate on health care spending sets up a clash of ideas that will have to be resolved before the state finalizes a spending plan for the upcoming fiscal year. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. Last year, Florida lawmakers didn't approve a bill giving all state workers the same contribution for their health coverage. Tom Flanagan reports that idea may be more successful this year.
Governor Rick Scott had pushed the idea almost from the moment he took office last year. All state of Florida employees would get $5,000 a year to help them buy health insurance, whether individual or family coverage. That concept resurfaced in the House Health and Human Services Committee, chaired by Robert Schenck, Republican of Spring Hill.
They will get a defined contribution, which means a set amount of money, and then they will be offered a cafeteria-type plan, which means that they can use all of that contribution to buy various health care coverages. They could use more than that if they want to contribute. They can use less than that, and if they use less than that, then they have options of putting it in things such as a health savings account or bringing it home in their paycheck.
Besides being more pricey than it should be, Schenck says state workers' present health coverage is behind the times, and his plan is the way the country is moving, or should be moving.
I think there's a general trend that if we really want people to be healthcare conscious, healthcare responsible, then they need to be giving more choices and more control over that. So I view this as not a private public, but in general, this is the way our society should be moving towards how we do healthcare in America.
Sam Bell with the Florida Pediatric Society says there's one more benefit lawmakers should consider.
I've got an actuarial report here that shows that it would actually save the state money.
Those savings could amount to about $7,000 a year for every state worker who's now signed up for family coverage. Individual health coverage could be closer to $1,000 per employee. It would be the employees who'd pay the difference if they opted to keep the kind of coverage they have now. Jacksonville Democrat Mia Jones thinks that's no bargain.
Knowing that the bill that you're presenting is going to require that additional dollars will come out of the pockets of the employees, and these are our employees that make the least money. So I would ask you to reconsider that.
Fellow Democrat Elaine Schwartz of Hollywood even put forth an amendment allowing state workers at the bottom of the wage scale to apply for the federally subsidized kid care program, something that didn't sit well with Representative Schenck, the bill's sponsor.
So what I would say to you, Representative Schwartz, is you can either withdraw or I'm going to ask the members to vote down your amendment. That's entirely your call, but it's not friendly, and we'll be voting it down if we vote on it.
Schwartz's amendment promptly failed on a party-line vote. In debate, West Palm Beach Democrat Mark Pafford said health coverage was quickly becoming one of the few decent benefits left to Florida's beleaguered state workers.
Now, I certainly understand and respect the idea that we need to save money in the state, but I would argue we're already there. We're the 50th leanest state. Do we really need to take this extra step and use choice as an excuse for limiting the type of health care and quality of care and access to care that I would argue would occur under this legislation?
Port St. Lucie Republican Gail Harrell countered that the new plan could actually wind up putting a few extra dollars into employees' pockets.
If you have a health savings account and you have additional funds that you have not consumed over the years, you can actually take that with you. It's your money.
And Ocala's Dennis Baxley insisted state workers will be far more savvy and frugal healthcare consumers if they have more figurative skin in the game.
I've been in emergency room treatment before, went through the whole process, went home. I didn't know for months even what the bill was. Had no clue. How could I be in charge of that purchase of my own health when I had no information?
Haines City Republican John Ward cited the words of a consultant the state had called in to evaluate the existing employee health care setup.
The state's current approach to its health plan is best described as paternalistic, whereby the state serves as the architect custodian of the plan, providing generous benefits and allowing employees to be passive and perhaps even entitled.
So the bill changing the health care situation for Florida's state workers passed the committee on a party-line vote. In the event the proposal makes it through the entire legislature, the plan's details would be worked out by an independent benefits consultant hired to help the Department of Management Services put the plan into effect. The Senate's leadership has also expressed interest in this kind of health care change for state employees. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
House Business and Consumer Affairs Subcommittee meets at 9 Friday morning. One of the bills to be considered would create a state gaming commission to oversee pari-mutuel wagering, slot machines, and gaming. Another bill deals with destination resorts and the setting up of a destination resort trust fund. The House Rulemaking and Regulation Subcommittee will deal with a bill that requires that members of the public be given a reasonable opportunity to be heard before a board or commission. The Florida Highway Patrol holds a news conference at 10 o'clock on Friday morning to draw attention to the move-over law for emergency vehicles. And that's the day book for Friday, February 3rd.
Finally, Florida lawmakers are looking into a number of bills aimed at collecting a sales tax for goods brought over the Internet. Some estimate the state is losing out on hundreds of millions of dollars in uncollected taxes. But Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers are more interested in trying to level the playing field for local businesses than making up that money.
Under current Florida law, citizens who buy something online and aren't automatically charged a sales tax by the store are supposed to charge themselves the sales tax and send a check in to the government. But Senator Evelyn Lynn, a Daytona Beach Democrat, says more often than not that doesn't happen. Lynn says there's no mechanism for enforcing the rule. She says instead people are going to the web because without paying a sales tax, stuff is cheaper there. And she says that makes it hard for Main Street businesses to compete.
You've probably heard that Best Buy has now become a showroom for online. People go into Best Buy, they find what they really like and find out how much it is and try it out, do everything with it, sometimes even buy it and bring it back. And then they go online and find that they can get it much cheaper because they don't have to pay the tax.
Senator Lynn presented a committee bill from the Budget Subcommittee on Finance and Tax aimed at tackling that issue. The measure had initially been drafted by Republican Senator Ellen Bogdanoff of Fort Lauderdale, but Bogdanoff has since moved to chair the Budget Subcommittee on Criminal and Civil Justice Appropriations after Republican Senator Mike Fasano of Newport Richey got booted from his seat. Lynn says the bill would protect businesses that otherwise have to compete with retailers who, because they don't collect sales tax, can automatically charge a discounted price. Florida Retail Federation President Rick McAllister says that really hurts the state's small businesses.
And while the big businesses are screaming about this, they're surviving, most of them. The big buys, the bookstores, the people that are easy to hurt, they're not doing so well. The rest of them don't like it. It's unfair. But it's the small people who are really suffering. And the growth of small business, which is so vital to the state of Florida, is going to suffer unless we fix this problem quickly.
And Senator Gwen Margolis, a Miami Democrat, points out sales tax is a major source of revenue in the state.
The impact has been, especially on our revenue source, has been an incredible blow to the state. And I don't think that we'll ever see a year again that we don't have a shortfall.
Right now, only stores with an actual location in the state are required to collect sales tax from internet sales. The committee bill would expand that so that retailers who use another organization to help them do or solicit business in the state would also have to collect and remit sales tax. It would also require collection from companies with websites that have click-throughs or links to online retailers like Amazon that pay a commission for sales stemming from their site. Florida Governor Rick Scott, who's pledged not to increase taxes, has said he would sign an internet sales tax bill provided that it's revenue neutral. Lynn says the committee bill is because the measure stipulates that any money brought in from taxes collected for purchases made on the internet would be given back to Floridians. She says that could be done in any number of ways.
So it could be the sales tax holiday, it could be lowering the tax rate, it could be implementing any other tax relief that is decided upon by our state.
And Lynn says an internet sales tax is not a new tax. Citizens are already supposed to be paying it. She says internet sales tax collection laws have been enacted in more than 20 other states. The bill was adopted by the Senate Tax and Finance Committee. Several similar bills have been filed, including one by Senator Nancy Dietert. Dietert's proposal is more stringent, though she's said she is willing to amend her bill to match the Senate Finance and Tax Committee's measure. Several other internet sales tax bills have been filed in the House, but House leaders have been hesitant to take up measures that could give the appearance of adding a new tax. Meanwhile, there are rumors circulating about an offer from Amazon to build a location in Florida that would create more than 2,000 jobs if officials agree to exempt the company from paying the tax for at least 2 years. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.